Well, g'day everyone, and welcome to another edition of the National Conservative Institute of Australia podcast. My guest today is Sal Grover, an Australian businesswoman and one of the parties in litigation originally entitled Tickle v Giggle, which turns on the question of what the legal definition of a woman is under Australian law. After a brief detour into Confucian philosophy at the beginning, we discuss the status of her case, what the definition of woman is and why it is so important, whether she has received much support from women within Australian political parties, women in the corporate world, or other organisations set up to support women, what the best arguments are for persuading people about the importance of this issue, what the outcome of the litigation will mean and how she is doing emotionally, and much more. I hope you enjoy our discussions. Sal Grover, welcome to the NatCon Australia podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, I'm going to start with a left field intro because I'm a China guy and it just occurred to me. In the 5th century BC, an elderly philosopher wandered China advising governments in a society that was falling apart. In one of his most famous passages recorded in something called the Analects, Confucius was asked, "If you had the authority, what's the first and most important thing you would do to fix society?" He replied, "Make sure words are used correctly. For if words are not correct, language is not in accordance with the truth of things. If language is not in accordance with the truth of things, then the state cannot be properly administered and chaos will result. Therefore, it is very important, dear disciple, to get the definitions of words right." Sal Grover, what is the definition of a woman and why is it important?
Such a left field question. The definition of a woman is an adult human female, and it is important because it is based on truth. So when you were just before you started the actual Confucius quote, I was thinking my answer to this would be the most important thing to get society back on track would be have a society based on truth. And so everything flows from that, everything. So even if you put truth there, language will flow from it. So It's part of my why I actually care so much about this issue of, say, what some people would call a culture war of this definition of a woman and who can be a woman and everything that comes from that. Yes, female-only spaces, of course. That's how I got brought into it. But it's actually the truth. It's the thing that bothers me the most is that if the state or anyone can force you by fear of punishment to believe something that is not true, especially something that is so obvious, like what a woman is, what's next? You have no rights. If you can't acknowledge that reality, you have no other rights. And I think that that is terrifying and chilling. And the fact that we have, say, the Australian Human Rights Commission, who is the most major institution pushing that, is terrifying for all Australians. This goes so far beyond women's rights. This is everyone.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's the point I think he was making so many centuries ago. For those not familiar with your story, and I'm sure you've repeated it many times, but how did you get dragged into a situation where you are defending what the meaning of a woman is?
So I created a social networking app with my mum, and we were getting ready to, got the idea in 2018, developed it, got it built in 2019. We're getting ready at the beginning of 2020 to launch it. And we woke up on the 7th of February with just inundated with thousands upon thousands and thousands of men on the app. We were only still beta testing with thousands upon thousands of one-star reviews. They were saying reviews calling us transphobic on the actual app. These men were creating profiles saying things like kill TERFs. They were also leaving reviews of that nature. I had no idea what a TERF was. So just we were under attack and I'd never experienced anything like that before. I didn't have an online presence. I wasn't sort of in any space like this. We just had an idea and we were just executing it. And so I was told basically by all of the people under attack to educate myself. And I was like, well, that's a fair comment. I'm obviously completely uneducated by what's going on. And so I started doing some research and found out that in countries like Australia, the US, the UK, Scotland, Canada, then also it's happening in Japan and South Korea and parts of India as well, that not only were men claiming to be women, but institutions and governments were backing them. And what happens when you have such a lie that has sort of institutional support like that? As I said, it's anti-truth. It's not. It's anti-reality. It's not real. So you've got a huge problem with everybody's rights there. But if you are just talking about women's rights, because that was the word that was being disputed, all of women's rights go. Now, there's some that go first, which are women's spaces, women's sports, women's services, all of these things that have been carved out in society, rights that have been fought for and won, that established, that are required. And some people might say that that's sort of, you know, it's an affirmative action. And in a sense, it is. But I would argue that what has happened is reset the clock on that affirmative action, because nobody ever accounted for the fact that they were going to come along and say that there's kind of, you can't even define what a woman is. And so, yeah, I was sort of thrust into this crazy, crazy zeitgeist that was not prepared to be part of, had no idea that it was going to happen. I'd heard in the background, completely living under a rock. I'd heard in the background that there was the T was now part of the LGB. And I had that trust of like, okay, I'm on the side of the LGB. If there's another letter, I support that too. I was being a good little liberal. I didn't think anything more about it. It was only until it was sort of thrust upon me that I did and just basically did some research because I had to. And so when there are people that come at me and say there's no issue here or anything like that, I'm like, you haven't been affected personally yet. So you haven't gone and done your own research. But even if you haven't been affected personally, the fact at this point in time, like in 2025, that you haven't done your own research, that's on you.
One of the great things I like about this debate is that it's brought together a coalition of people like yourself who weren't traditionally sort of culture warriors, right? They were middle of the, you know, well, they came from various political persuasions. You have Labour vote, Scottish Labour voting, J.K. Rowling. You have 60s liberal feminist Germaine Greer. You have Kip, you know, you're from movies or originally, right, and tech, hip girls like yourself who were sort of like vaguely, you know, cool with the sort of the culture. And then you have, you know, outer suburb, ex-Labor people like Maura Deeming. You have people that were never, they just asked questions and were very sort of sincere and weren't getting proper answers like Gillian Spencer and realized this is nuts. So yeah. it's just, in theory, it's such an attractive kind of broad-based movement. What do you think distinguishes those who get it from those who think that anyone opposed to redefining the term women is a, you know, hateful bigot and all the rest of it?
I don't think there's one answer, because I think there are quite a few things that are going on. So you have, let's just first of all look at the people who are all in on it. Even there, you've got tiers of people in the sense that you've got the people at the very top who are pushing it, whether that's in politics, whether it's in high-powered institutions. Then you've got the media. Then the next level you've got are like teachers or medical professionals, people like that. Mm. And then you've got sort of what I would always call like the foot soldiers, like the people just like living their everyday lives, some of whom are pushing this. And you're like, why? Like they are the ones I'm going, why? What is in this view? Because I get for the other ones, it's power, it's money, it's keeping your social standing, it's going along with a zeitgeist and just not challenging it, especially one where, for whatever reason, the parameters of this zeitgeist has been, if you challenge it, we will destroy you. So they've just chosen where they're going to be on that. And in some circumstances, I understand it. Like I can understand why some journalists, for example, I don't respect this. I'll preface what I'm saying. I don't respect it, but I understand why some would say, look, I like my job. I like being able to pay my mortgage. I've got a family to support. I'm just not going to rock the boat on this. It's not worth it to me. Okay, you've made your decision, but I get it. What I don't get is that people who have sort of no stakes at all in this, that some who just push it of that, but for them, it's just this manipulation of empathy, of be kind. it's one of the, was for a long time, was one of the most spoken things about it, was just be kind, be kind. And again, I'd heard whispers of that in the background as well. It very much wasn't in the bubble that I was living in pre-2020. And you hear that and you think, well, of course it'd be kind. Of course. Who doesn't actually live their life that way? Psychopaths. Everyone else actually lives their life to be kind. But then when it hits you and you go, hang on, okay, I'm being told to be kind here by people who are being incredibly cruel to me. What is it that I'm, who am I being kind to and what am I being kind about? And what I quickly realized is that to be kind to men who claim to be women was literally at the expense of cruelty to women. I was like, well, I'm sorry, that's not a price I'm willing to pay. Yeah. And I actually don't think that it is kind to lie to people. I don't think it's kind to tell people that they can be born in the wrong body, or that, yes, you are a man who is actually a woman, or you're a woman who is actually a man, or you're neither of those two things and you live in some, you're just some completely different species. No, it is cruel to indulge that kind of stuff. So I think that there's people who have very different reasons for believing it, but they would all come down to either power, money, or fear.
What have you found the most persuasive ways of sort of getting people to see the light?
There's two ways that are the most persuasive. In Australia, the thing that gets people 99% of the time is sport. We all know that males and females are different when it comes to sport. Apparently in no other way, but in sport we are. So people can put that together really quickly and go, oh, of course. But so then you've got to get them to jump from, oh, well, just in sport, to, well, okay, there are other areas in society as well. And then the other part is the kids, what's happening to kids. That once people understand that kids are being told that they can possibly be born in the wrong body and that they should be medicalized for life based on that, people do, I find, start to put two and two together really quickly. They just start to let's play it through their mind and be like, hang on, this isn't kind. Why would you do this? So and one of the things that I've learned, and I do agree with this to a point, is that the women's rights part of it comes quite late. I agree with that in the sense that I think this issue is bigger than women's rights, although women's rights is a very important part of it. But I think it sells the enormity of the issue short to say it's just this demographic of people. I mean, this is the bedrock of society that we're fighting for here. This is truth. It's reality. It's freedom of speech, belief, and association. So once you can get people to realize that it's bigger than just, you know, some men are claiming to be women and some women are saying no to that, that there is something, that this is actually really important. It's not some little sort of cat fight, for lack of a better word, happening over in the corner, and they start
and I mean, it's not a parlor room game. There are actually real consequences to what's going on. Who do you think is ultimately driving the movement to redefine women?
Again, there's so many layers. This is a thing you start to, you research so much, you start to become a prisoner of what you know. Again, there's lots of layers, and I think there's a brilliant author and voice in this, Helen Joyce. She wrote the book Trans: When Ideology Meets Reality, and everyone should read this book. It explains the whole thing. And she said, to sum it up, and I think she even says this, that it was a perfect storm of a lot of different things. You had essentially a lot of the big major civil rights things were, legally speaking, one, and lots of parts of it socially speaking, one as well in our countries. Like we say, for example, you know, we got gay marriage was legalized. Like there were equal rights now. And then so suddenly you had a lot of organizations devoted to that that didn't have anything to do. So what were they going to do next? You had a lot of people for quite some time, a lot of men that were meeting in these sort of secret societies, claiming to be women, wanting to do more with that. You had a pharmaceutical industry who cared. I mean, there's some parts where I go, oh, that's a bit too conspiracy theorial to me, although there's possibly elements of truth. But I just do think that just it was a perfect storm of a lot of different elements of people needing the next fight, basically. And this sort of synthetic fight emerged that piggybacked on the LGB and some parts of feminism, and everyone went, oh, okay, well, that's the next one, not realizing that by supporting that, they were undoing the work of all of those organizations I'd done before.
What explains really high profile, very, very politically savvy women like Julia Gillard, our first female prime minister, and Shannon Fentiman, who was the minister for women here in Queensland, their inability to take your side in this debate?
Well, so Julia Gillard is an interesting figure in Australia in this movement, because while she was giving her what I think is now infamous misogyny speech in the background, her government was removing the definition of woman from the Sex Discrimination Act, thereby removing women's rights to single-sex spaces, sports, and services. So for Julia Gillard to not know, claim to not know what a woman is, but then dine out for the better part of 10 years on being the first woman prime minister of Australia is, I think, the height of hypocrisy, and I could not have less respect for this woman. How she could get respect is if she came out and went, you know what, I made a mistake. I didn't realize what this was about. Which, when you look at what they did to the 2013 amendments and how much Julia really had anything to do with it, only people in the rooms would know. My argument is that she was the head of the government, so she has to take responsibility for it. And you should know what's going on, and you can always say no. I do know that it was Mark Dreyfus, the Attorney General then, and at least today still is the Attorney General. Might be ending really soon. He was a big, someone who really pushed for it. Why? I don't know. But in 2013, I mean, this was a private member's bill. It was in the dead of night, as stealthily as possible. They removed the definitions of men and women from the Sex Discrimination Act. They put in gender identity. Didn't really tell anybody. There was a handful of women who knew, a lot of like sort of feminist, academic feminist women who knew, and lots of like said Bronwyn Winter, with Julia Gillard, I don't know what her involvement was in any of the rooms, but it is her, my position is it's your responsibility as the prime minister to know pretty much everything that's going on, especially what's going to be passed in your name. And so basically in the dead of night in a private member's bill, they removed the definition of woman and man and they added in gender identity. What makes it even more sinister, I think, because they did that in 2013, they still made gay and lesbian people beg for the right to get married and didn't do that, and did that with a plebiscite in 2017 and put a postal vote out to everyone saying, do you support same-sex marriage? So they were still relying on this concept of sex in a different act, in the Marriage Act. But in the Sex Discrimination Act, the Australian Human Rights Commission's claim now is that there's no such thing.
So do you think they actually understood what the implications would be?
This is my point with it, is that if they had just put gender identity into it, I would say maybe you didn't know. But because they took the definitions of man and woman out, I'm like, I think there was some malice there. I don't think this was just ignorance. And also, the job of legislators is to actually look at the ramifications for anything that they do. So even if, so it just shows that they didn't do it. Now, yeah. This all, you know, and how sinister it was, it is bad. But like, I've read the Sex Discrimination Act as it is right now 50,000 times at this point. The act still works. It's to say that did Julia Gillard seriously, were they there when they were doing these amendments going, yep, completely wipe out women's rights? Or were they saying, you know what, when gender identity is in play, it's gender identity discrimination, but when it's sex is in play, it's still sex discrimination and gender identity doesn't override sex? I would say that would be the fair and reasonable way that they had planned to do it. If I was going to be generous to them, I think that that's actually probably what they thought. What they didn't count on is that you've got the little gremlins at the Australian Human Rights Commission over here being so corrupted and captured by ideology that they're just going, no, 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 like men are women, and will literally throw everyone else's rights under the bus for that demographic of people, which is what I'm experiencing at the moment. And then to go back to your original question, like the likes of Shannon Fentiman, to be honest, I think she's just a useful idiot. I don't think she believes in this at all. I think she's blindly ambitious. And I think that Labor was giving her all of the really controversial bills, state bills to pass. And she did them because she wanted to become premier, thinking that, oh, if I do this, you know, sort of you say jump, they say jump, I'll say how high, I'll do all of this, and then they'll give me premiership. And her, she was on the shortlist with two other guys, and the two guys got the premier and the deputy. She didn't even get it, and she probably never missed now, all for nothing. I honestly think she was just playing an ambitious game, and she lost, and I think they always knew she would lose.
Yeah. Not to over-labor it, but I'm sure that Julia Gillard and Shannon Fentiman have probably read a bit of Germaine Greer, right? So how is there that kind of divide?
Read, but go on.
Yeah, okay. There you go. But it's sort of weird, this parting of ways between, and I find this across the board, broadly speaking, the kind of, let's call it baby boomer feminists. Are much more, that's just ridiculous that men can be women. Obviously not. They almost struggle to comprehend how some younger women can believe this. What do you think explains that generational divide?
Well, I mean, just at the start of it, I think that Julia Gillard definitely would have been a Germaine Greer reader, which is what probably behind the scenes makes you go, what were you doing? Also, my assumption would be, do I think Julia regrets this now? Yeah, I do. I watched a clip of her recently where she was actually asked last year what a woman is in just a town hall sort of thing that she was doing in a public speaking event. Yeah, and she stumbles through it, and then she's trying to avoid answering, and she's saying, you know, I live half my time in the UK and half my time in Australia. And I found that really interesting because I was like, well, you now live half your time in a country that has established that a woman is an adult human female, and the other half, in a country that has not yet reestablished that because of you. And so I think that now that she's seen how this has all played out, I have no doubt she's completely aware of it and regretful. And I would have a lot of respect for her if she actually came out and said, look, absolutely made a huge mistake, I'll help you, or get on board.
It would be very big news, and it would move the culture a lot if she did that, right? Because she would have the natural people who are her fans and would go like, okay, if she's saying it, then it gives me permission to do that, to also say the same?
I think so, because I think that we all know politicians make mistakes, and we all do actually know that politicians are human beings. One of the things that I think bothers a lot of people is that politicians rarely actually apologize and go, look, I really messed up on that, which it would be really nice if that became something normal. If she actually let that and went like, look, this was not how it was sold to me. I am so sorry. Look, let's get this back on track. I would actually have all the respect in the world for her for doing that, because I don't think that someone like Julia Gillard, who is from that era of women, who you know, that Germaine Greer era of women, whether she read her in full or just sort of skimmed it a few times, but very much was that first generation that could really go out there into the workforce, and kind of there was nothing stopping them, so to speak. So then sort of, you know, some of us take for granted, but it really, you know, it's quite, you know, remarkable what the women before her did to be able to get her to that point. And that her whole career sort of culminated on being the first woman prime minister. And this was her achievement, to then during that time take the definition of woman away. My one conspiracy-ish sort of thing is I just go like, was that convenient to have the woman do it so that it could seem like it was this intra-woman fight, that it wasn't about something bigger, it's just women fighting amongst themselves, or have a woman do it so we can blame the woman? Like, I just feel it's a bit too convenient not to alleviate her responsibility of it, but you just got like, there's so many.
You've had a lot of time to think about this. You're allowed to go down a few rabbit holes because I've thought about it more than most. On the other side of politics, we just had an Australian election here. The Liberals lost dramatically. And the leader, Peter Dutton, was asked during the election campaign, what is a woman? He fubbed it, said it wasn't important, which obviously would have been infuriating for someone like you and many others. And you wrote and said, look, this is crazy. You're going to lose women voters because of it. Have you received much support by other women in the Liberal Party?
Claire Chandler, obviously, is the big one. Claire Chandler is awesome and has put a lot on the line, the senator in Tasmania. She was doing the Women Save Women Sports Bill long before that this was even front page news in Australia to what it is now. Other women liberals, that would be a no. I think it's just Claire. There are other politicians. Obviously, then you've got Moira, you've got Sarah Game in South Australia, Alex Antic. Obviously, you've got Pauline Hanson.
I think Carolyn, the president of the Libs in WA, she's put on Twitter. She supports
yes,
you guys.
Sorry, that's, she is as well. In Western, she has been really good as well. But so, I mean, we're talking a handful of politicians in general in Australia.
What about Susan Lays, who's put herself to be the next leader?
Yes. No, she has been horrible on this issue, even when there were some pressure for Peter Dutton to say anything. She was just dismissing culture war, culture war, culture war. And my position on that, two things, is one, to end a culture war, you just have to take a position on it and then you can end it. So to just sit there and dismiss it as a culture war is actually to continue it. So I think they enjoy it to a point. I think that's a completely wrong way to play it. Two, if it's just a culture war, can you let the AHRC know? Because I'm in federal court over this culture war, and I'd like to move on with. So if it's just a culture war, also all of the lesbians in Australia who can't meet anymore without allowing men to be in their groups, can you let them know it's just a culture war? Like, no, it's a, if this was not an issue, we would not be here talking about it. We're not crying wolf. We're in court. The laws are at least being interpreted against us. And I say that very clearly. I think the Australian Human Rights Commission's interpretation of the law and what the federal court is accepting is completely incorrect. But we could all be moving on and focusing on all of those other issues. Mm. But we're here debating and fighting for something that is so obvious. This is the stupidest thing you could be spending your time doing. Of course, men are women. No one believes this.
People recommended you as a guest for a while, and I, you know, loved your stuff and saw you on other shows. But at one level, I was thinking, you know, is there really much more to talk about? Because it's at base, it's just a definitional issue, and everything else flows from that. And if you just accept that biological women can't be men and vice versa, then That's almost the litmus test for sane discussion, right?
There are some times where I sit there and I'm either going to write something or I've got to go and speak on something like this. And I'm like, I don't know how many more ways I can say this. But then at the same time, there's different things that are always happening. And Australia is a few years behind, especially the UK, on this issue. This is for all of us that are in this fight. This has been obvious to us for a time. We've been really trying to play catch up with it. And it is going to catch up quicker than how it played out in the UK, but we are still a frustrating distance behind. So just today, for example, in the Daily Mail, a story broke that a man who claims to be a woman is threatening discrimination against Fernwood Gyms. Now, Fernwood Gyms have been woman-only. This is like an Australian institution at this point. They've existed for a long time. I know I've spoken to many franchise owners of Fernwood, which apparently the Fernwood corporate's position has always been just put it on the individual franchises, we're not going to deal with this, which I think is actually quite horrible. I think they actually should have come out and challenged the law quite early because they existed before these amendments and before this culture war. But a lot of Fernwood franchises, they have had men claiming to be women come to them, and the Australian Human Rights Commission sides with the men and they basically say you've got to pay them $10,000 to make them go away. It's either pay them $10,000 or go to federal court. The only difference with me of when I got an Australian Human Rights Commission complaint, and basically it was that. It was $20,000 is what I was being asked to pay him, but in negotiations you could assume that maybe it would get down to 10, was that one, I didn't have $10,000 to give him, and two, it killed my entire thing. I was a startup. I was at the very beginning of it. There was no point to it if I let these men on, because then what, congratulations to me, I've invented Twitter. Like, the whole point of my startup was that it was female only. There is actually no other point of difference to it. So I was just very much like, no, I've put in a lot of work for this. I want to use this. I want a female only digital space. I want women's rights in general as a woman existing in the world. So no, sorry, messed with the wrong one. I'm going to fight you on it. I knew it was going to take a long time, but I mean, when you're actually living it out, I'm 3.5 years in. It's a long time, but you know, if you are running, a franchise like a gym, this is happening all over Australia, and you're just having to budget in paying these amounts of money because the Australian Human Rights Commission is basically, you know, supporting the people who are using activist lawfare against you. How can you just say it's a culture war? How can you say this isn't affecting real Australians' lives? Are we in a cost of living crisis or not? Like, this is all part of people having to spend so much money on nonsense when the government could literally fix this in a week for free. You just hold a meeting, go in, I don't know, control F7, delete 2013 amendments. Find another way to put it in. If you want gender identity to be in some kind of discrimination act, in legislation of some kind to protect people who have that, find a way to do it. But find a way to do it that does not impact anyone else's rights. It can't impact freedom of speech, freedom of belief, association, LGB rights, women's rights, child protection, parental rights, and employment rights and employee rights. Find a way. You can do it. No one's going to stop you. But no one's even tried it.
Yeah. You shouldn't have to resort to or get involved in litigation. You didn't actually want to get involved in litigation, but to be successful in litigation in order to change the law. So changing, it ultimately should require a political solution. But the Liberal Party's, you know, can't work out what a woman is. The Labor Party doesn't want to change its view on what a woman can be. And then you've got like the fringe parties, like the Pauline Hanson types, who are, you know, probably making the right points, but in a way it's not great because there's a sort of middle, you know, the inner city or like well-heeled types don't really want to hear it from her, or they think it must not be an argument. So it sort of it has to be the major political parties that bring the gravitas to the issue and make the change, right?
Well, it's not going to be Labor because they did this, unless they do. Renizi does decide to admit that his party did something wrong. So then you go, it's going to have to be the Liberal Party, which, you know, they had such an open goal there because their open goal was obviously not just this particular thing. It was sort of DEI, all that thing that was affecting people's everyday lives. They could have just gone in, didn't have to center their campaign around it, could have just said, this is what's going on. We're completely aware of it. This is what we're going to do. When we get in, moving on to all the other issues. That's it. Exactly. Just state the issue, state the plan, and then move on. But they didn't. And hopefully have sleepless nights about it now. Look, I'm really grateful for what Pauline has done on this, especially with the TID stuff of trying to stop the medicalization of children. I mean, all credit where credit is due. She has really fought for this. And I think that, you know, in history, when they're looking back, people aren't going to be sympathetic to the people who went, oh, I just didn't want to listen to Pauline over child sterilization. Well, that's on you. Because you know what? Anyone mentions that children are being sterilized, you listen and you go and find out if what they're saying is true. And if they are, you thank them for letting you know that it's happening and you do something about it. You don't go, oh, not you. I don't want to know from you. You're not cool. Well, you know what? I don't care what your opinion is on whoever is saying it. It's the issue. It's like, you know, with Trump has done a lot for this to break the zeitgeist in the US. Do some people then go, oh, now it's Trump in politics? Yeah, but they're wrong. I mean, what a woman is existed long before Donald Trump was even born.
he's everything gets tainted with the Trump brush, but he's nothing if not able to spot a winning issue, right?
That's the thing. I don't even think like that Trump necessarily cares about women's rights. I don't care. He saw a political win and he took it. That's actually being a good politician. Peter Dutton should have seen a political win and taken it. Now, Pauline effectively has done that. You could ask, has she then, by doing that, taken away the Liberal Party's ability to
that's all like political game. I think that again, all credit to her, she's right on the issue, as is Trump, but it's just like it needs the main political party to bring their mind on it otherwise.
In the UK, for example, they really never had it. I mean, it was the courts that dealt with it in the UK.
Yeah.
And now, because all of the bad stuff happened under the Conservative government in the UK, and now Labour is in, so it was sort of the other way around for them. Yeah. Now Labour is in, because the the left had control of the institutions, and that's how it happened. So all the women used the courts. They won in courts. They've just had the biggest win in the UK Supreme Court. And now you've got politicians catching up to that. So while it should be that the politicians should be listening to constituents every day, they're not. So you have to then go and get the courts. And one of the things that's really difficult with this issue is because it has that fear built in of, like, if you speak out against this, you could lose your job or we'll punish you. So there's a lot of people that just support, like, say, the women who speak up or anyone who speaks up, they support from very much from behind the scenes. And so we can't go and sort of get those big rallies because people don't want to lose their job on Monday morning. And I get it.
Yeah. It's weird at the moment. Sometimes the UK is ahead of us on issues and sometimes they're behind, for better or worse. At the moment, there's definitely more change in this area in the UK than there is in Australia on caste review and puberty blockers and the definition of women and all the rest of it. So hopefully the waves from there eventually rock up against our shores, but I'm not sure. Have you received any support? Because you're a presentable professional person, right? Have you received any support in corporate Australia from things like, you know, executive women networks and or all those networks that are encouraging women to sort of be involved in politics? I mean, have you had Hilma Network invitation to address their gatherings?
No one. I've never been contacted by anyone. Like, when people sometimes, you know, there's always this trans activist mantra that's always being said that women like myself, you know, we're just being funded by the far right and whatnot, and, you know, it's just, we're all just grifters. And I'm like, no one's ever contacted me. I'm running the world's worst grift over here. I've never even gotten so much as a text. No, I mean, as I said, I think that Australia is a little bit behind. I do feel it's changing very much. I think the next sort of 18 months is going to be really interesting. And hopefully the toxicity of just all the fear, like, that you don't have to be fearful anymore, that more people can just start speaking out. So we'll say that if everyone just started speaking out within a week, they can't cancel everyone. Mm. It would end it. So it's like, if everyone just got collective courage and, like, we could end it that way, it would be fantastic. But yeah, there's a small pool of different groups and institutions and media in Australia. I mean, you know, you have Mamma Mia, Australia's apparently leading women's news site. They won't speak to me.
Mumsnet was quite powerful in the UK on this issue. But Mamma Mia hasn't been, right? That's sort of interesting.
I mean, they just, in Australia, as I said, our media pool is very small, and, you know, and the amount of money in play, I suppose, is smaller than, say, it is in something like the UK. And so people are more fearful in that sense. You know, no one wants to lose their livelihoods. If you get fired from that place, like, where do you go? Where's your next job?
Yeah.
So, as I said, I understand it to a point, but for some places in Australia that are supposed to be women-centric to completely drop the ball on this issue. I mean, Mamma Mia is like a tiny fish in that respect. We actually have the Sex Discrimination Commissioner who is working against women and the definition of sex. I mean, she is actually a problem here. Because if the Sex Discrimination Commissioner went into federal courts and it actually interpreted the law correctly to all people, like, yes, okay, I would win the court case. It wouldn't be taking away any rights that, say, a man with a gender identity had, but he never had the right to go into a woman-only space. That's not how it was ever supposed to be. They've given him something he never had, to go into an app that's no longer even online or not currently online. It's just, you know, they fought so hard for one demographic's rights at the expense of everyone else's. That's what I was saying at the very beginning, and which is, it is the wrong way to go about it. Like, there really is a way they could have gone about this that actually helped everybody. And yeah, okay, it wouldn't allow men who claim to be women into women-only spaces, but they shouldn't be there. Otherwise, because the moment they are, it's not a woman-only space anymore. It's not women's sport anymore. So they're not supposed to be there. You could have gender identity that actually helps them in some way. whether it's forming their own leagues, creating their own spaces. There's so many different things you could do. To expect us all to just sit here and believe a lie was, well, they will find out in the long run, the absolute worst tactic they could have chosen.
Yeah. It sort of anticipates my next question. How do you think men who want to pretend to be women should be accommodated in society in a humane and proper way?
Okay, so this is the thing. It's not one completely cohesive demographic of people, because you've got men with autogynephilia, which is the fetish of thinking of yourself as a woman. You have some men that have some very distressing, what would really be, if you're going to talk about it in really literal terms, it's really like a body dysmorphia. They're very uncomfortable in their own body. And then you've got children who have sort of been either taught some very ideological lies or have been indoctrinated with it online. So you've got just, and that's not even, that's just some of the examples. So it's like, you can't even deal with all of these in the exact same way. So, because for example, like a man with autogynephilia, for who claiming to be a woman is a fetish, and you can tell who they are, it's very obvious. And it is 99% of the grown men doing this. The most humane way to deal with them is to say, do whatever you want in the privacy of your own home. You keep the rest of us out of your fetish. Thank you very much. For everybody else, like for somebody who is genuinely experiencing distress in their body, I would say that, and I talked to Julian Spencer about this, like, talk therapy. Sit there and talk for years if you need to, until you can accept the only body you'll ever have and the reality that you live in. And that there's nothing wrong with being a man, or if you're a woman, there's nothing wrong with being a woman. And that the world is your oyster from that point onwards. Like, you don't, there's a lot of things that that's not going to stop you, but there's just some realities that do exist. And then for children, I mean, that's just the whole other level of just how do you help kids who have been taught lies, who have been indoctrinated with nonsense, who are on a pathway of utter destruction, because if they get medicalized, it's just a lifelong devastation. You're going to deal with them very differently to how you're going to deal with the adults. So anyone who just says, you know, we just have to have compassion to the trans community, who are you talking about? Who are you talking about? Because it's not a clear demographic of people. And quite ironically, it's divided by sex. Women and girls claim to have gender identities is significantly different reasons than why men and boys claim to have gender identities. And they kind of play out in some ways how you would expect that sex to, that's the socialization of each sex to have an issue. So there's some people smarter than I that have said some of the clearest ways where you can see the sex differences of people is by the people who are trying to deny their sex.
And obviously you don't solve anything by lying or lying about the meaning of a word. That's not a solution. So it has to be something other than that, right?
Exactly. As we said earlier, like, it's not kind to lie to anybody. It doesn't help. But, you know, if there's so many lies, for example, that maybe we would go, oh, that would be too far, that would sound ridiculous. So say, for example, if someone said, okay, we're going to do amendments in legislation that you can choose your age, and anyone, you know, this is how they actually feel, you're a bigot if you deny this, you've got to validate this is their actual age. So, you know, while he might be biologically 47, he identifies as 7, and who are you to tell him he's not? I mean, I think everyone listening can see where that goes really, really quickly. Why would you think it wouldn't happen with sex as well? You know, you just sort of all got saw that there was this concept of a gender identity that some people could genuinely feel like the opposite sex. You can't feel like something you are not. And so but we had this weaponized kindness, this attack on everyone's empathy. A lot of people thought, you know, okay, this must be a real thing. It's only when you start researching it, when you read the work of the people that have done a lot of research into it, who are really critical of it, for good reason, and you go like, oh, hang on, like, this was never real. This was never real. This was something we should have ever been fighting for. Mm. Not to say that the people who claim to be trans don't exist. Every human being living in this very moment in time obviously exists. But someone's claim about themselves does not exist for other people. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
And in this zeitgeist, we've all had to, we've been expected to accept these bizarre claims, and we shouldn't have. And it's been discrimination against everybody else, essentially.
Yeah. You are going to the High Court. How does this play out? If you win, what likely happens? And if you lose, what likely happens?
So at the moment, the appeal is actually to the full federal court. High Court will be next. So in August this year, we go to the
You'll be in the High Court. You'll be in the High Court eventually, I'm sure, Sal.
Well, let's see, because I'll tell you how it plays out and I'll tell you what my predictions are. Let's see if I'm right or wrong. I've been wrong on a few things here. Because when in 2020, when I first heard about all this, I'd said to my mom, it's so stupid, it'll blow over really quickly. And here we are 5.5 years later. So I was really wrong about that, but I genuinely did think it was so stupid. So we are appealing the decision from last year. So the Tickle v. Giggle decision was indirect discrimination and sex is changeable. We are obviously appealing that. In that same case, Tickle is cross-appealing. So he's also appealing the decision he won. He's appealing the decision he won. I'm appealing the decision he won. He's cross-appealing because he wants indirect discrimination upgraded to direct discrimination, and he also wants damages of at least $30,000 and aggravated damages of at least $10,000. So if we win this round, this appeal, the cross appeal falls away immediately anyway. And it would be then up to Tickle to take it to the High Court. Now, the Australian Human Rights Commission / Sex Discrimination Commissioner has intervened as amicus curiae in both round one and now round two. You would assume they'd do the same again in round three in the High Court. The Australian Human Rights Commission, as I've been saying, are very much saying it's gender identity, humans change sex, men or women. If they just say, it's just a thought. There's nothing they even have to do, which, to be honest, fair, like there's nothing a man can do to become a woman, so it shouldn't be contingent on anything because there's nothing that can make him one. But they're just saying it's just a thought a man can have. And if that man has that thought, then that overrides every right a woman ever has. So they would be going, so if we win this round, we would win basically because we have established that sex has weight in the Sex Discrimination Act. That biological sex, which was what the Sex Discrimination Act was founded on and intended for in 1984, we would win on the basis that sex still has weight in the Sex Discrimination Act. So the other side would be applying to the High Court an appeal on the basis that sex has been given weight in the Sex Discrimination Act. So if we lose this round, we would be applying to the High Court because sex has not been given weight in the Sex Discrimination Act. Mm. Now, there's a part of me that thinks, like, so I will go to the High Court if I'm required. If I lose this round and I have to, I will go to the High Court. I always figured that I'm in a marathon. You don't stop the marathon two-thirds of the way through. It would be lovely if the end of this year was the end of the marathon and I won it, but we'll just wait and see. This is just how my life has been for a long time. I just have to wait and see. It's very hard to tell anything. But, as I was sort of alluding to earlier, can the Sex Discrimination Act work as it currently stands? Yes, it can. You have sex, it's the Sex Discrimination Act. And you have gender identity in there. You've got all of these different sections of the act and whatnot. Some of them very much refer to biological elements. Some don't. We'd have to believe that the Labor government in 2013 actually intended to completely destroy. Like that was the intention, to completely destroy women's rights and the concept of sex in any sort of, like, the reality of sex in any legal way, that it became this legal concept, not a biological one, that this was their intention. While it's very, it would be very easy for me to sit here and be like, oh, yes, they were that malicious and that's definitely what they were doing. No, like, I don't actually think they were. I think it's concerning that they took the men and women out, but there's a chance that there's someone else that was more malicious and they just didn't realize what they were doing and they just didn't do the work they were supposed to do. So it could have been crazy ignorance, but the Sex Discrimination Act right now could work in just the sense that, of course, if it's a female-only space, it's female-only. There's nothing there's nothing you can do as a male to come into that space because your sex is not female. You might have changed your identity documents to say something. It doesn't change your sex. So if that's how it was going to play, if that's how the law was going to play out for a while, and that you would just have protections for people on the basis of a gender identity. Now, keep in mind, I don't believe in gender identity. I don't think this is a real thing.
Well, you're trying to make the legislation work and get
I'm trying to make it work in general, make people see that, like, there's more than one way to win this. It isn't just unless you repeal these amendments, there's no possible way that women can have rights in this country. That's just simply not true. We should have them now, to be honest. We actually should have the rights now. The biggest institution that has worked against us is the Australian Human Rights Commission because they have been interpreting the law accurately. You take their interpretation out of it, their incorrect interpretation out of it, and the law actually works. It's just that they are elevating gender identity into a completely different stratosphere to anything else. I mean, you only have to read their submissions into Tickle v. Giggle, like the first round, to see how absolutely insane they were. There's one part where they're literally saying a man's desire to be pregnant is sufficient for him to be considered a woman under the act. Like that, when I read that, when I was first reading this submission, I was like, open the whiskey bottle, just, what on earth am I reading here? This is just madness. But yeah, I mean, so just my ultimate point is that this legislation could work. It's just that if you go, there's no possible way that legislators wanted to take away all of women's rights as well.
Yeah.
If they did, that's a whole other level. So my argument, while we do want the amendments repealed because the legislation worked for exactly who it was supposed to work for before them, and also you technically don't need gender identity discrimination because, for example, if a man was wearing a dress and he was being discriminated against on that basis, that would actually be sex discrimination. You don't even need gender identity because it would be happening on the basis of his sex, that he was being going against his sex stereotype. So you don't even need it there. Well, that's sex.
You either win with an argument that the legislation works and you have a favorable interpretation where sex-based female rights are preserved, or worst case scenario, you lose. And then there has to be a political kind of change to the law.
Then you're going to the High Court and you're arguing that there is an error in law because the High Court's an error in law's court. And the most a High Court can do, they can't repeal the amendments themselves. They can very strongly suggest legislators do it. And that does actually happen. Like, I think one of the sort of most recent cases of a High Court sort of miscarriage of justice was, remember there were the refugee sex offenders in detention, but they didn't have countries to go back to. And so the High Court ruled that they had to be let into Australia and they all reoffended within a week. And so legislators went, we've got to fix this law. Like, there's something wrong with this law. I mean, so obviously different scenario, but the point being that while the High Court can't change the law themselves, they can strongly suggest in their decision and then legislators go, oh yeah, you're right.
The High Court could also say that the Parliament didn't have power to legislate for gender identity. It only had power to legislate for sex, and therefore
that is part of our defense. And now, case as it always has been, we've always been doing a constitutional challenge that they didn't have the power to do this. I mean, they don't have the power. Like, just on the most basic level to just go in and effectively completely change the meaning of an act. Like the Sex Discrimination Act is now against sex. It would be like if you had the rental tenants authority or whatever it is, if it was like, oh, this is not about renters anymore, everybody, this is now about circus performers, you'd be like, what? what are you talking about? Why did you just completely change all of that? Yeah. It's the same thing of like, you just completely changed an act of legislation to now be against the group that it was supposed to be for. No, you don't actually have that power to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it is crazy because Australia has actually led the world in, you know, a lot of advancements for women, first voting rights, first mm-hmm. Ability to stand in parliament and all sorts of other bells and whistles. So it would be quite disappointing if we were sort of the last people in the Anglo world to sort of finally get the message that a mistake has been made. But you never know. Hey, I don't usually ask this question, but I try to keep it at an hour because I sometimes think it's a bit of a soppy question that media types ask when they've got nothing better to ask. But it's been 3.5 years. How are you doing, like, emotionally over this time? Do you have times where you, like, I don't know, risky?
It would be about 6 weeks ago now. I was the most stressed I had been in the whole time. I'd been existing in a state of stress for a really long time, and I was starting to get really, really overwhelmed. There's just lots of stuff happening behind the scenes with it. The cost fight, you know, just having this person coming after me for so much money. I'm sitting there going like, what did I do wrong? And being really frustrated with politicians. And one day I was just laying in my bed and feeling completely overwhelmed. And I just stopped myself and I was like, if you keep thinking like this, you won't be able to cope. But you're not at the end yet. You're going to have to change your attitude. And I just started speaking out loud and being just sort of putting things into perspective that I hadn't done for a long time. And I physically felt the weight lift off my shoulders, and I've felt great since then. So I'm about 6 weeks into feeling good. It was much needed because I was really starting to, not so much, I wasn't kind of losing it, I was starting to really crumble under the pressure of it. Like, I just felt the weight of my world on my shoulders, and simultaneously going like, this isn't fair. And it isn't. At the same time, like, there's a lot of things in life that are unfair. Like, this should never have happened. This should have always been fixed by legislators, by institutions. They should have always seen the injustice of this. They should never have dragged a single mother with a startup through the courts 3.5 years for knowing that a man is not a woman. Mm. I mean, but that was part of like my moment of clarity of, you will never be the bad guy in this.
Yeah. I reckon there's a great book. When the whole story finishes, you've got a great book to pull together, and you can.
I agree with you. And so I sort of realized that of like, it feels overwhelming now, but eventually you will be so grateful that you did this, because you'll look back and it'll be done. Then, you know, there's a thing that you sort of do, is imagine yourself at that point where you're grateful that you did it.
Hmm.
And so now I try and just look forward to that a lot. But I'm not going to lie, it's been really hard. I mean, I was 15 weeks pregnant when I first got the Australian Human Rights Commission complaint. My daughter will turn 3 the month before we go to the Federal Court of Appeal. These golden years of her life have been stolen by this. The amount of energy it takes to make sure, like, she has no idea. Absolutely no idea what's going on. So it takes a lot of energy to make sure that she has no idea how stressful some days have been. The fact that I haven't been able to just focus on her, that there have been times that I've either had to go to a different country or I've had to go down to Sydney for a week-long court hearing, has very much, again, made me lose respect for anybody who could have stopped this. But at the same time, I look at her and I'm like, I can't send her out into a world where she has no rights, which at the moment there's no definition for what she is in law. So I would be a bad mother if I sent her out into the world and was just like, oh, okay, well, that boy that you've got to compete against. No, not only do you have to compete against him, you've got to see him as a girl. Off you go. No.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing more stressful than being involved in litigation, even small scale litigation. And you are involved in big litigation. But if the upside is that you do get a lot of new friends and supporters and allies, and
and
if people want to support you in this cause, I'll drop all this stuff in the show notes. But to donate to you, what's the best way for them to do that? Or
so we have the crowdfund, which is gigglecrowdfund.com. So the whole thing is being crowdfunded, and it's really the generosity of people who support the case and the fight that we're in. All the information about the case is on there. The first round was just over $500,000. This one is going to be about the same, if not slightly more. And then I don't even want to think about what it would be by the time I get to high court. I don't even, let's just cross that bridge if we come to it. But what there's two things that I can say is, one, I'm incredibly optimistic. So while it's been horrible and harrowing, and while politicians, yes, have been incredibly weak on this issue, they're wrong. And they don't know, they haven't been looking at the actual cultural zeitgeist and what people in the actual country, what the real people are actually saying. They haven't realized the shift that's happened. A few have, but not enough. I'm very optimistic with how this case is going to go. And the other thing I can say to thank you for people who are supporting it is that I'm not going to give up on it. Like I've said from the very beginning, I'll go to the High Court if I have to. And hopefully we don't, but if we do, that's where we end up, and we have a fun high court party. Okay,
it'll be a monster one, Sal. Hopefully, yeah. Hey, strength to your hand. Really, really good to chat to you. And anyone who can support you, all the details will be in the show notes, and do what you can. Thanks again. Look forward to keeping in touch.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Cheers, man. Bye.